Can you be evicted during this coronavirus pandemic? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. There's been a call for a moratorium on evictions. The governor has considered it. Senator Rick Scott has called for similar action on mortgages, rents, and utility bills. If so, what are your rights as a homeowner, a condo owner, or a renter? We have a panel discussion with legal experts to help you find answers. Call in today, 800-743-9576. You can also email us your questions, sundial at WLRNnews.org. Also,
it is a natural human reaction. If you don't see it, you don't think that it's going to get you.
The country of Italy is on lockdown. It remains the epicenter of the crisis in Europe. They're about 2 weeks ahead of us here in the U.S. Will we learn from their mistakes? All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, this pandemic has placed us in uncharted territory. There are a lot of questions and a lot of uncertainty. Let's take, for example, housing. We've got a lot of questions about housing from our listeners and online readers. Questions like, if I lost my job and I'm unable to pay the rent, can my landlord evict me? If someone is showing coronavirus symptoms in my building but continues to use public areas, what can I do? And why hasn't my condo owner shut down the pool? Well, we've gathered a panel of attorneys specializing in housing law to try and answer your questions today. Joining me now is Alessandra Stivelman. She's a partner at Isinger Brown, Lewis, Frankel, and Chayet, focused on real estate and condo association law. Alessandra, thank you so much for being here. All right, I know that she is there. Hopefully she can hear us. Carolina Shear is a partner at the same firm focused on community association and real estate law. Carolina, great to have you.
Hi, good afternoon.
And I think, Alessandra, did you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Perfect. All right.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you. Thank you so much. And also joining us, Jeffrey Hearn, Director of Litigation at Legal Services of Greater Miami, joining us via Skype. He's focused specifically on tenants' rights. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we want to hear from you if you're a renter, a homeowner, a landlord. What are the questions you have about housing as we live through this pandemic? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. You can also find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Post your question there, and we'll try to get to as many of them as possible today. Jeffrey, I want to start with you. We're coming up into April now, which means that mortgage and rent payments are going to be due. And, you know, we've been hearing a lot about moratoriums on evictions. But, you know, I go online and I see people asking questions about, well, do I have to pay my mortgage? Are they going to evict me if I'm a renter? If I don't pay, what's going to happen? Clear it up for us exactly how COVID-19 is impacting the way that we're dealing with housing issues right now.
Right. So part of the problem with describing what the situation is that we don't have a uniform answer here in Florida. In some states, the Supreme Courts have stepped in and stopped evictions, have issued statewide moratoriums. We don't have that here in Florida. What we do have is, as of last night, the Florida Supreme Court has said that court clerks will not issue writs of possession until after April 17th. And that's the order that happens at the very end of the case that tells the sheriff to come and remove somebody from the unit. So the question that we have is sort of, you know, if you're a tenant, you don't have your money to pay your rent, what's going to happen April 1st? So the next step after April 1st is that a landlord must serve a tenant with a 3-day notice. If the tenant's behind on the rent, it's a written notice to the tenant saying, you need to pay me all the rent due within 3 business days. The landlord, or if the tenant is unable to do that, the landlord is then entitled to file an eviction in county court asking for possession of the property. The tenant has 5 days to respond, and they also have to put the money into the rent that's been unpaid into the court registry. And that's the big problem right now, is that if a tenant doesn't have a defense to the eviction, they don't have the rent, what are they going to do if the landlord files an eviction and they can't deposit the rent into the court? Now, in Miami-Dade County, the chief judge tolled all deadlines last week until this Monday. But as of now, evictions are going to proceed after March 30th in Miami-Dade County. But the sheriff will not, the writ will not issue to the sheriff, and the sheriff, as of now, while the emergency is in place in Miami-Dade County, will not execute.
Am I basically hearing you say is that, you know, the landlord can evict, but really can't throw them out because, well, the court's not going to be there to back you up?
Well, right now, I would say on a day-to-day basis, you know, this could change in 24 hours. But that's our fear as tenant advocates, is that the process is still going to move forward next week, and we have people who don't have the rent money. What we're encouraging people to do is talk to their landlords, talk to their situations. On our website, legalservicesmiami.org, we have a list of resources, including some rental assistance programs here in Miami-Dade County that will help.
Yeah. Alessandra, let me come to you. I mean, this kind of makes things tricky for landlords, you know, because, you know, again, if, as Jeffrey said, this can change day to day. Everything seems to be changing. But if the court's not there to back you up, what can a landlord do?
Well, so, you know, landlords, just like condominiums and HOAs that are trying to collect assessments, they can still go through all the procedures. But ultimately, as was just explained, we may not be able to actually throw anyone out until the courts open up and writs start being issued and the sheriff start doing what they need to do.
So I hear that. I hear that as a renter, and I'm saying, well, listen, I mean, you can't even throw me out, so I can't pay the rent, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Well, I wouldn't take it that far, because at the end of the day, if foreclosure proceedings or eviction proceedings are instituted against someone, that's public record. That's on the county's website, and ultimately you're going to have to deal with it. And depending on the type of lawsuit that's instituted, you may be responsible for attorney's fees and costs if you don't prevail.
Yeah. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN. You can also email us, sundial@WLRNnews.org. Let us know, what is your question? If you're a renter, a homeowner, maybe you're a landlord, what are your questions in the times that we're living, how we're moving forward? Because at the end of the week, going into next week, it's time to pay the rent, time to pay the mortgage. What's going to happen next? There has been a push for a moratorium on rents. Actually, Senator Rick Scott has asked for a moratorium on rent, mortgage, and utilities. But that hasn't gone forward yet. What are your rights? What happens next? Carolina, what about condo association owners pushing forward with evictions processes if someone's not paying the rent or fees? I mean, does it work the same for the associations?
So as far as associations, what associations are filing are claims of lien. They can still proceed with the filing of the claim of lien. But at the end of the day, the foreclosure process is treated very similar to a mortgage foreclosure process. You may have, as an association, difficulty right now obtaining a hearing date for the foreclosure process. You also are not going to be able to ultimately get the writ of possession, which is what what the association ultimately needs to evict a delinquent unit owner from the premises. So right now, I think for our associations that have unit owners that were previously in collections, you can't necessarily attribute the coronavirus and this crisis to the prior collections, but certainly all new collections coming forward may have a situation where they have been affected by this pandemic and lost their job, became ill, and are unable to make payments. What we suggest to our associations is that they work with the unit owners, perhaps work on getting payment plans in place. But ultimately, what's important to know is that the association must continue to run its operations. So the association still has to pay its bills, still has to pay its employees, still has to maintain and manage the condominium property. So we can't just stop payments to the association.
And that's an interesting point you made, is that if you were already in the process before all of this started happening, I mean, is there a cutoff date where they say, you know, your situation is not about this pandemic, Or, you know, I mean, how do you prove that?
It's going to be very hard to prove, and matters are going to be need to be taken on a case-by-case basis. And at that same time, you have to apply a policy that is uniform throughout. You can't favor one person's circumstances over the other person's circumstances. So it's going to be a judgment call, a business decision that has to be made by the board of directors in conjunction with advice of counsel and their management team. And ultimately, they're held to a standard of reasonableness. Is the decision to provide this individual who's delinquent a payment plan a reasonable decision?
Right. Again, talking about housing rights, housing issues in this pandemic. And we want to hear from you if you're a renter, or a homeowner, or part of a condo association. What are the questions you have? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. We heard from somebody already, Alexandra Baza, here in Miami, saying this: I am a property manager for a small private landlord in Miami Beach and Little Haiti. A big majority of our tenants are people who work in the hospitality industry or retail-related industries, and we have for years tried to keep the rents as reasonable as possible, but that does not leave a lot of cushion. Despite the common perception, the money that a landlord receives is not free and clear. We are like every other business with bank loans, the mortgage on the property, utilities, and vendors to pay. What can governmental entities do to help? You know what? Anybody want to tackle that? Are there governmental entities that can help someone like that?
Well, as far as I believe that the Small Business Administration is extending some help to small business owners, that may be an avenue. For condominiums, I sympathize with this caller because condominium associations also have to pay the bills, but condominium associations do have, under emergency powers that are in place right now, have the ability to seek bank loans with a little bit less red tape than they would normally have to overcome.
Right. All right. I want to go to the phones now. Those are piling up. Again, the number 800-743-9576. I want to start with Syed in Miami. Thank you so much for waiting.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, sir. I'm a landlord here in Miami, and I make my living from the rents I collect from my tenants. Now, the question is, the tenants are getting relief not to pay rent for several months. Now, will I be, once this period passes, will I be able to collect the rents retroactively? And a second part to my question is, the real estate taxes here in the county are coming due at the end of March. Do you guys know if the county or there's any kind of governmental order or something that will extend the real estate a property tax due date?
Okay, so two questions there. Syed, thank you so much for the call. Jeffrey, I think I could start with you on this one, but anybody, please jump in. You know, he's got renters, and some of them have been told, I've heard this as well, just don't pay the rent. But, you know, if he's going to collect later, if he decides, okay, I won't take your rent now, but say in 2 or 3 months, I want you to pay for all those months you didn't pay. Can he do that? How would that work?
Yeah, so I want to be clear. There is nothing that says right now that tenants do not need to pay rent.
And by the way, you're right on that. I want to make sure there's a lot online. You got to be careful what you're listening to. There are people saying just don't, you know. So I just want to make sure that's, you know, again, you got to be careful what information you're taking off the internet.
Correct. And if you have the ability as a tenant to pay the rent, you should. You know, what we've been talking about are parts of the system, of the eviction system, that have been slowed down or stopped. But that does not change anyone's liability to their landlord for rent. We just recognize that in this crisis that many people are not going to be able to make those payments and what's going to happen to them. Just going back to the last caller, I would like to note that if you are a landlord and you have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac mortgage, they are offering forbearance to some landlords. And if they do that, the landlord must agree that they will suspend eviction against renters during that period. So there may be some relief from landlords who have multifamily buildings that are facing financial challenges.
And Syed was asking about county property taxes that are also coming due as well. Do we know anything about relief for landlords in that situation? I don't know, Jeffrey or Alessandra, anybody here know that?
I have not heard anything. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything that has addressed property taxes as of yet.
All right. Something that we'll definitely look into. Syed, thank you so much for the call. Jeffrey, what's the advice that you're giving people about how to approach landlords right now in these situations? Talking to them about, look, I just lost my job, nothing I could do. Can we work a deal? Is that what we're basically telling people?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's at the end of the day, I think most tenants want to pay their rent and most landlords want to get their rent money. Going through an eviction costs money and time for everyone. I think many landlords are understanding of what's going on right now. So I think open lines of communication is key. Talk about it. If you are able and eligible to apply for any of the rental assistance programs that are out there, talk to your landlord about that. Try to get their assistance with that. And I understand that if this stimulus bill passes, there may be some final financial assistance coming out. We don't know when that's going to be, or I don't know when that's going to be yet. But that may be another pot of money that can be used to negotiate. So I would just say open the lines of communication immediately.
And yes, the Senate has passed its stimulus package. The House still has to look at it. Again, something the president will have to sign or not sign. Again, talking with a panel of attorneys here on housing issues during this pandemic, we're talking with Alessandra Stivelman and Carolina Shear. Both of them partners in the same firm, and also Jeffrey Hearn, Director of Litigation at Legal Services of Greater Miami. And we're taking your calls. Again, if you're not getting through, you can always just find us on Facebook or Twitter and post your question there at WLRN Sundial. Carolina, do we have a playbook for something like a pandemic? I mean, we've been through hurricanes, we've been through wars and terrorist attacks, but something like this, I mean, do we know how to deal with this?
So Floridians are pretty equipped to handle emergencies, but this is completely uncharted territory. As far as associations are concerned, the legislature has enacted emergency powers, but those powers are meant to deal with, or most likely were written to deal with natural disasters, hurricanes. What happens if you have to evacuate? What happens if there's damage to your property, to the building? If the structure is deemed unsafe? I'm not entirely sure that when the legislature enacted these emergency provisions, that they had a pandemic or quarantine situation in mind. However, we can adapt much of what's provided in there to address the issues that we're facing today. So do we have a playbook? No. Are we tackling issue by issue, one at a time, trying to employ reasonableness, trying to be practical, trying to be fair? Yes. But no, there's no playbook.
Alessandra, I'd imagine that right now that all three of you are pretty busy. This is, again, uncharted territory. I'm just wondering what typical questions do you get? What are the things that you're hearing from people?
So we've seen this progress also based on the type of questions that we're getting. Originally, we were getting questions that were more general in nature about closing of the amenities and whether, also about board meetings and members meeting, whether the board had the authority to postpone that, what they should do about the amenities, should they close it, should they not? And it's progressed to what happens if someone tests positive and they're a resident in the condominium? And they're not complying with the orders that are in place for quarantining, or they just flew in from New York or New Jersey and they're supposed to be quarantining for 14 days and the condo board is aware of that and knows that they're not. A lot of the questions that we've been addressing are, does the board have the right or the authority, or should they communicate that to the members and the employees? Are they violating any privacy laws in doing so? Or do those or does the everyone's right to know and protect themselves supersede any privacy rights? I mean, there's a lot of risk analysis that are going on, that is going on right now.
And you know what? There's because we're going to spend a big part of the show today talking about this issue, and I want to get to condo, right? You know, the condo associations and what powers they really have, and I want to get to some of those in a little bit. Let's go to back to the phones. I want to go to Brian in Plantation. Quick question about what to allow, who to allow into your place, like if you have workers working on apartments, right, Brian?
Yes. So in regards to routine maintenance, what are the rights of Florida tenants that are under self-quarantine in their own apartments? What are the rights of tenants to deny routine maintenance, like annual inspection, upgrading appliances that were just so happened to be scheduled for that for this month of March? If you're under self-quarantine, can you deny a landlord or request a landlord not have workers enter your unit to possibly be exposed to a virus?
All right. No, very good question, Jeffrey. Self-quarantining, you got to protect yourself. The landlord says, wait, we got to fix something. I mean, what rights do you have as a renter?
Well, you know, we're in uncharted territories here, but the statute that applies here says that a tenant cannot unreasonably withhold consent to a landlord. You know, the question about whether it would be reasonable to withhold consent to allow somebody to come in if you're self-quarantined seems reasonable to me, but I think that's an area where you could have some disagreement. So it will be interesting to see what happens with the courts or if the legislature decides to clarify this going forward.
Okay. All right, Brian, thank you so much for the call. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Again, the calls are coming in. We want to hear from you, whether you're a renter or a homeowner, you know, whether you live in a condo, you know, a condo unit, you're part of a condo association. What are the questions you have as we move forward? Again, there have been calls for moratoriums on rent and on mortgages. There have been calls for moratorium on utilities, but we haven't seen those things happen yet. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. We're going to continue our discussion with our panel and answer your questions, all of that coming up here on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Let's get back to our panel conversation about housing in the time of COVID-19. Again, we're joined by Alessandra Stivelman and Carolina Shear, both partners at Eisinger Brown, Lewis, Frankel, and Chayette, and Jeffrey Hearn, the Director of Litigation at Legal Services of Greater Miami. And the phone lines are filled up here. If you're trying to get through, you can always find us on social media at WLRN Sundial, Twitter or Facebook. You could just post your question there. We'll try to get to as many of them as we can. Alessandra, we were talking just briefly before about condo associations, and we bring it up because lots of condos in South Florida, a big portion of the population lives in a condo unit, and so you have to deal with these associations. But in a national or state emergency, what powers does an association have?
So, as Carolina mentioned, the statutes that have been enacted are mostly for purposes of a national disaster or a hurricane. But there are certain powers that we've been adapting for this type of circumstance. So, for instance, the power to cancel or adjourn meetings and reschedule, the power to take out loans or pass special assessment without so many of the restrictions that an association may normally need to go through, such as unit owner approvals. There's a lot of different references, such as to implement a disaster plan, to determine that certain areas are can be unavailable or can be closed. And that one we can use because a lot of condominiums have closed their amenities. And to determine whether the association can be safely occupied or inhibited and to mitigate damages.
And you know, Carolina, let's say, because we had, you know, heard one of the comments earlier was this concern about What if I know that one of the tenants is showing signs, symptoms of being sick, but they're still hanging around the pool and, you know, some of the other public spaces? What if we know that one of the tenants had traveled to Italy or New York City, but nothing's been done? I mean, what would I do as a tenant? What could I do?
So this has created, it's somewhat of a dilemma, and it's created a lot of debate amongst practitioners on how to handle this. Because on the one hand, you want to respect the privacy of the individual. On the other hand, you want to protect the health, safety, and welfare of all the other residents and owners and staff at the building. A lot of this has now been somewhat preempted to the extent that there are is an order in place, an executive order from the governor that was put in place yesterday regarding individuals who are flying in from, say, the Northeast. I believe it's New York and New Jersey, and that they are mandated to quarantine. And I believe that the executive order actually provides that the authorities can be contacted to enforce the mandate. So as far as what we've been suggesting up until this point, and we've had, we haven't had up until the last few days, everybody seemed to kind of be complying and helpful, but now we're starting to see some pushback
from
some owners.
And, you know, I mean, look, we heard from, for example, officials at the Fort Lauderdale airport that once people leave the airport, I mean, there's not a whole lot you could do. You just, you know, they can just walk in and out. They're going through.
Right. And the problem for condominium or for associations in general is you don't have the right to self-help. You can't become the police agency for your condominium association and block someone from walking the hallways. You would have to contact the local authorities and they would have to take over the matter.
Yeah. It's a different, as we've been mentioning, uncharted territory. This is all new for a lot of us. All right, I want to go to the phones. Let me start with Linda in North Bay Village. Linda, thank you so much for waiting. You got a concern about landlords still going forward with evictions.
Well, it's not actually a landlord. Basically, the association on March 2nd was a successful bidder at a foreclosure sale. We have been trying for almost 2 years with this owner to collect back fees.
Hmm.
And so we basically have been successful. And when, you know, just in the last week, we've been trying to figure out what to do because we went into the apartment and somebody is living there.
I see. So this, I mean,
and
this goes.
So they're basically squatters, but we were under the impression that we can't go forward with eviction because, I mean, it's not actually a conviction. It's an eviction. It's a squatter.
Yeah. Jeffrey, I mean, so this is before, you know, the pandemic kicks in. But again, is there an issue with the courts right now that they wouldn't be able to handle one of these situations? Or how would you respond to Linda?
Well, typically after a foreclosure sale, the courts, there will still be a writ of possession. That's the order from the clerk that tells the sheriff to come out and remove somebody from the property. But those aren't being issued right now, and sheriffs aren't executing on them because of the public health safety, right? We're putting people outside when we're telling people to shelter. So as of now, I don't think they can obtain a writ of possession until April 17th. Now, I will say there may be some exceptions. They may be able to, if it's an emergency situation, speak with the judge. But for the most part, we're not removing anyone from any house in until April 17th.
And so, Linda, you were just under the impression that that was the case, right?
Well, we've been operating once we realized somebody was living there. From what we heard was that, you know, there's no evictions going on, so we haven't proceeded. But when I actually heard earlier that this show is going to be on, you have answered quite a few questions for an association as well as for the owners.
As Jeffrey said, this is where...
And one other thing that we have, what about work that's being done outside the building, which is, you know, can be disruptive at times, because we've been under a construction project of... a 10-year restoration.
Right. I think, again, as we heard, because we did hear earlier about that, is the situation with if the workers are outside. My understanding is, I mean, look, if we're keeping a distance, But, you know, what right does the owner or the renter, the tenant have in keeping workers out? And that's, you know, so we had talked about that a second ago. But I think if they're outside, if they're, you know, Carolina, is that true? I mean, is that the situation? If there's a separation, you're fine?
Well, the owner is getting to it. We have ongoing construction work. We don't, they're outside, and yes, it's, there is a barrier. But the other issue is you have everybody else inside right now, and maybe the construction situation is creating more of a nuisance, because noise, debris, so on and so forth. So at that point, the association needs to look at their particular contract with.
Okay. And I know the line was coming in and out. Linda, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And best of luck to you. Carolina, I think we got most of what you said. I know the connection there was.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We got a lot going on, and we're going to do the best that we can technically. Usually I have you guys in studio, but obviously we're not going to be doing that right now. Again, talking about housing issues in this time of coronavirus, and you know, we're taking a lot of calls, a lot of you guys coming through. Again, if you're having a hard time getting through, you can always just email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. If we don't get that question today, by the way, you know, we'll keep those questions. We'll look into them and see if possibly we might be able to do some reporting on that and get an answer for you. I wanted to ask the question about senior living facilities, because, you know, this is a big challenge for us today. This population, this portion of the population at greatest risk. Alessandra and Carolina, this is mostly for you, because you look at the communities with 55 and older in some of these facilities. What are the initial questions that you're getting about those groups and how they're handling it?
So those were some of the first associations, our 55 and over communities. Those are the first ones that really reached out to us with a lot of concern. They were overall the first ones to close all the amenities. But we've been getting a lot of questions from 55 and over communities and other condominium associations because of the high density in one small area as to the banning of guests and the banning of visitors, and can we restrict who comes in and out? And this issue becomes very difficult to address when you're dealing with perhaps older residents that need someone to check in on them and to ensure that medicine is properly administered or that they have proper supplies. So one thing we're telling our clients is that even though you're imposing restrictions or rules, or the board may be adopting protocols, all of this needs to be on a case-by-case basis. It has to be reasonable, and the board needs to be prepared to really look at the individual circumstances of every guest that's coming in to determine whether that guest is really necessary, perhaps to assist an elderly resident.
And if there's an elderly parent that needs regular visitation and, you know, the association's refusing to allow that, I mean, what could you do?
I mean, I think there's a huge...
Carolina, go ahead.
At that point, if it becomes an issue of probably contacting an attorney or the local, you need to have access to this individual, whether it be for or caretaking or otherwise. The association can't necessarily prevent a nurse or a caretaker from coming in and providing valuable access. I think it becomes a liability issue for the association if you're preventing that type of access. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about visitation for social purposes. We're talking about basic medical and life safety considerations here.
Yeah, you have an older parent. You're probably bringing them supplies. You might be trying to just help them. Let me go back to the phones. I'm going to start with John in Fort Lauderdale. John, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, hi. Can you tell me what is the situation is for tenants who have a month-to-month arrangement with no lease? Can a security deposit be applied to the rent?
Jeffrey, a month-to-month situation, how would a renter deal with that? And as John asked, what about that security deposit? Could that be used?
Right. So if you have a month-to-month tenancy, a landlord has to give you, in most places in Florida, 15 days notice before the end of the month. So if the landlord wanted to say, hey, get out, they would have to give you a notice for the end of April. In both Miami Beach and the city of Miami, it's a 30-day requirement. But nothing in the law allows a tenant to sort of unilaterally apply their security deposit to rent. But that is always something that is on the table to negotiate with the landlord, to give it up as rent if you're unable to make the upcoming payment. So like I said, open that line of communications. If that's something you want to offer, offer it to the landlord.
All right, John, best of luck to you. Hopefully that helps out. Let me go back to the phones. I want to go to Vivian in South Miami. Vivian, thanks for holding. Vivian?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Vivian.
Okay, my question is, because I haven't heard anything about self-employed people that live paycheck to paycheck. I'm a massage therapist, so obviously I don't have any work right now. So what do I do about my mortgage payment when I have a conventional loan, not a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac? Is there going to be any help with that?
Okay. Again, as I mentioned before, there has been that the push for moratorium on mortgages. But you know what? Anybody on the panel, Alessandra, Jeffrey, what about, you know, folks like Vivian, self-employed, not an FHA, just paying to the bank?
Well, I would encourage her to reach out to your lender because you're not the only one going through this situation and see what options they have for somebody who can't make their payments. There may be programs, as Lewis said, that may be coming up announced by the federal government. So we'll just sort of have to take it a day at a time.
And Vivian, have you reached out to your lender? Have you had any luck?
I did do that, but at this time they're not doing anything really except for loans mitigations or reform, you know, and I can't do that. So,
and they can't push a couple of payments to the back end of the loan, right?
They haven't said they can yet. No.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck. Keep trying. Good luck. And again, day to day, things are changing. We don't know if the state or the federal government does anything. Vivian, thank you for the call. We did get this comment question from Elijah Manny tweeted us. Caller to my emergency operations center. Landlord is rejecting my rent. I usually pay by check. They want me to send a MoneyGram. Landlords are doing this because MoneyGrams are guaranteed, whereas a check can bounce. Is this legal? Jeffrey?
Well, it would depend on what your lease says. So you would look to your lease. If the lease is silent and you've been paying one way before, I would just say it's unclear. Look to your lease because that's really what's going to dictate how you pay.
And also another one, we got an email from Correa. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, I signed a rental lease for our daughter to attend UCF. The move is not until July. If UCF is still closed, are we still obligated to pay for an empty apartment? Jeffrey?
Once again, you're going to have to look to the lease agreement to see what it says, if there's any options to terminate it.
Okay. Always look to the lease, look at the fine print, but then call them. Call them and find out because, again, there are going to be, if that's the case, there are a lot of students who are not going to be going to school. That's a lot of apartments that were leased out, and I know that they have to get those way in advance because they can go out very quickly. Again, talking about housing issues here in the time of COVID-19, and, you know, gotten a lot of great questions. I want to go back to the phones. Let me go to Matthew in Boynton Beach. Matthew, thanks for waiting.
How are you guys?
We're hanging in there. How are you doing?
Hanging in there day by day down here.
Definitely.
I've got a question regarding my rights as a renter pertaining to the amenities that my apartment complex offers me. They have shut those down to us indefinitely. And as we all know in South Florida, a lot of our rents are directly reflective of the amenities that we pay for, such as proximity to the ocean, gyms, community centers, and whatnot. And my question really is, as a renter, do I have a right to ask for a rent adjustment, seeing as I no longer have use of these amenities? And my apartment that I live in, I could easily get for significantly cheaper if I were to move inland.
Interesting point. Matthew, thank you for the call. Jeffrey, I'm going to start with you on that one.
The state law, I mean, first, as we said before, always look to your lease, but I doubt it's going to have anything in there that's going to be helpful for the tenant with this respect. The law really contemplates damage to a unit that where a unit is uninhabitable or the landlord's not making repairs, as when a tenant might have the ability to go to court and seek a reduction in the rent. But you know, I think that's going to be a tough situation to make that argument. Yeah. Based upon amenities.
All right. Alessandra, I want to finish with you quickly here. You guys have a free hotline for HOAs and condos that have more questions. Can you give us some info?
Yes, absolutely. So as part of our community service, what we did as a law firm is we issued a free legal hotline for condos and HOAs for directors, officers, and property managers. The number is 1-888-215-ELAW. So that's 3529, and we are willing to answer any questions related to this COVID-19 epidemic for the purpose of assisting condominiums and board members on how to.
Okay, I think we're having issues with connection, but. Okay, we're going to get that information, too, online, share it on our social media. Jeffrey, if tenants have questions, where are you sending them?
Yeah, so Legal Services of Greater Miami, we're a free law firm that provides free civil legal assistance on civil issues like evictions, foreclosures, people who have public benefits like reemployment assistance, unemployment assistance, denials, which we know we're going to see a wave of those coming in the next few weeks. So they can contact our office. Our website is legalservicesmiami.org, and our phone number is 305-576-0080. And if you're eligible for assistance, you'll speak with an attorney to see if we can provide you further representation.
And again, we'll make sure we get those up on social media so everybody can check those out. We've been talking with attorneys Alessandra Stivelman and Carolina Shear, both of the same law firm, and Jeffrey Hearn about housing issues. Folks, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Still to come. We should not take this pandemic lightly. Just look at Italy. We're going to hear from a former Miami reporter now based in Rome about what's happening over there.
Come all ye fair and tender ladies.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, life is changing by the minute because of this pandemic. Last night, the city of Miami issued a shelter-in-place order. Other South Florida cities are moving to implement similar measures. We're going to end the show today by taking a look at Italy. The country has surpassed China for the number of deaths caused by COVID-19. The government has taken extreme measures there to lock down much of the country. Earlier today, we spoke with Nicole Winfield, Associated Press correspondent based in Rome. Nicole used to work with AP in Miami, and she still has friends here. And she explained what South Florida and the United States can learn from Italy's experience. Nicole, first of all, what can you tell me about what it looks like when you poke your head outside?
It is absolutely dead. I live a block in from one of the major avenues through the center, and all you really are seeing are buses that pass by, usually fairly empty, every couple minutes. So it is dead.
You're told to stay inside. Are you forced to stay inside? Are people just, is there a threat that don't come outside, period?
Yeah, I mean, you can go outside for three specific reasons. If you have to get to work, if you have a medical appointment, or for what the government says is another necessity, and that can be to go grocery shopping, even to walk a dog. But if you are stopped by a policeman and they are circulating, you have to produce a certificate that explains, that identifies you. So all of your personal information, you have to have this on you at all times. And if they find that your explanation for why you're out and about is wanting, they can fine you. And the fine now can be up to 3,000 euros.
So here in South Florida, we do have a couple of cities now that have basically asked people to stay at home, shelter in place, but not statewide yet. Why should we, you know, not just in South Florida, but in the United States, treat what's happening in Italy as the harbinger of what might be coming within the next couple of weeks here?
I think because the virus is spreading. It is spreading. It spread from the north of Italy to the south. There would be no reason to expect that seeing what you're seeing now in New York, for example, that it's not going to then also be spreading throughout South Florida. There, if I'm not mistaken, there are quite a few cases in South Florida. This thing, it spreads. There's no way to stop it other than to prevent people from coming into contact with one another. So there's really limited ways of preventing it other than keeping people home.
Italy has been in complete shutdown since March 10th, but when did the country start to take the threat seriously?
I think it was right around then. Starting on about February 22nd was the initial lockdown of just a handful of towns up in the north. And that was because they thought the cluster was really just limited to this area of Lombardy and one tiny little town in Veneto. And so the rest of Italy looked at those areas as, oh, isn't that sad? You know, we'll get through this, but it's not affecting us. And then obviously, the number of cases ticking up elsewhere in Italy increased. And then finally, the government, within 48 hours, locked down not only the whole of northern Italy, pretty much the two main regions, plus a handful of other provinces, but then 48 hours later, they locked down the whole country. And I think it was at that moment the rest of the country said, oh, God, you know, this isn't just those poor people up in the north. This is serious and we need to take this seriously.
But it sounds like at the beginning anyway, there was kind of a sense of denial.
There is everywhere. I mean, if you look also at what's happening in the United States, a lot of people are going about their business thinking, well, if I'm not sick, I don't need to take any precautions. I think it is a natural human reaction to an epidemic like this, that if you don't see it, you don't think that it's going to get you. And if you, you know, even if you're washing your hands and, you know, trying to be careful, this thing apparently is extraordinarily contagious and you don't know when you're going to get it.
And one of the things that we hear is that, you know, in the United States, some experts are saying we've done too little too late. Was that the case in Italy? Is that why Italy has, you know, just seen this incredible spike of cases and deaths?
No one will admit that, but a main point of criticism, at least from the unions, for example, is that when there was this initial lockdown on February 22nd, and there were a handful of cases that were coming from provinces outside of that initial lockdown area, why didn't we lock down a greater swath of territory immediately? Instead, they waited for about 2 weeks before a broad brush lockdown. And in those 2 weeks, you saw a lot of spread.
The one of the things, too, to point out is, I mean, Milan in the northern part of Italy, also very hard hit, very international city. We see what's going on in New York. Miami, a very international city. From what we saw in Milan, what we see in Milan, what can we learn? What can we attain from that to say, all right, what do we have to do to protect ourselves here?
Well, I think Milan, you can think of what happened in Milan similar to the spring break scene in Florida, because at the end of February, after kind of an initial lockdown, you know, the Milan mayor's office launched this campaign, you know, Milan doesn't stop. You know, they were very concerned about their economic ability to survive even this restricted lockdown of a few towns. So it was a total situation of denial of, you know, the economic engine of Italy must go forward. You know, we can't let this virus do a different type of harm to the economy. And I get the sense that that is the debate, the dilemma, not only in Florida, but in the whole U.S. and in other countries as they're trying to grapple with this. How much can you shut down? What might be the best thing to halt the spread of the virus will have grave, grave economic effects on that will be felt for months, years to come.
You know, from Italy, what is the lesson that we need to learn? What can we learn from what's happened there? What's the message you would have for us?
I think the message, what everyone should listen to, is what the doctors are saying. The ICU doctors in Italy have been sounding the alarm of get ready and get your ICU bed capacity up, because that is where you get slammed. The ICUs of Northern Italy have been completely overwhelmed. They are saturated. They have to now fly people out. And it is very hard to fly out an ICU patient in an isolation situation. So there's, I guess, two messages to the healthcare system is prepare now because your ICUs are going to be overwhelmed. And then to the general public, it's not so bad to just stay home. You know, it's a really small sacrifice. It's a small inconvenience, but there are, you know, people whose lives depend on it. Can't we make this sacrifice maybe to try to stop this thing?
We've been talking with Nicole Winfield, Associated Press correspondent based in Rome, covering the Vatican in Italy. Nicole, thank you for sharing with us, and continue to stay safe.
Thanks very much. You too.
And by the way, you can find more of Nicole's reporting on our social media at WLRN Sundial. Well, that's our program for this Wednesday, March 25th. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to keep talking about COVID-19, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to spend half the show talking about the actual virus itself. And what do we know? And what do you want to know? We got two experts on, Dr. Eileen Marty of FIU and Dr. Bindu Mayi of Nova Southeastern, and we're going to take your calls if you have any questions. Also, what about mental health? We got two psychologists on tomorrow to talk about how to protect your mental health. What are you doing during these times? By the way, find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Tell me what you're doing to protect your mental health. You know what I'm doing? I went back to painting. It's helping. It really is. By the way, we're listening to music from the indie folk duo Dracula throughout the show. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.